Ben Standig writes for The Athletic. He's got a podcast as well. It is called Last Man Standing. And, of course, he is our insider covering the Washington Commanders. He's with us every Friday and Monday at 12 noon. Today is game day, their first Monday night game since 2022. Their only Monday night game of this upcoming season. And really, their only high-profile spot, unless they get flexed into something a little bit later on in the season. They've got a Thursday night game. Everybody pretty much plays one Thursday night game at Philly in mid-November. But I don't want to bury the lead here. You texted me yesterday your prediction, but I want everybody else to hear it. Do you give them a shot tonight? What do you think happens?
Kevin, thanks for having me as always. I mean, obviously there's always the basic stuff, right? You know, you got to win the turnover battle. I think their margin of error is such that, you know, they can't afford to lose that. You know, that's a pretty basic thing, but you know, they're going to have to run the ball. Obviously we know that's the strength of this offense. And the good thing is it's probably the weakness of the Bengals defense. They're really thin right now at defensive tackle because of injuries and so on. So, you know, it does kind of blend nicely there. But on the other hand, you know, they're going to have to figure out a way to stop Joe Burrow in that passing game. You know, I think the T. Higgins part of this might be a little overblown, that he's back only because he just hasn't played, right? And, you know, it could always take a little bit of time to get back to speed. But the fact that you have T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase going up against a secondary that, you know, I think we're all very concerned with the cornerback situation. So they're going to limit their big plays. And I think one way to do that is by controlling the clock, run the ball, don't turn it over. So if they can do that, they've got a shot. But, I mean, I would, on the surface, despite the Bengals being 0-2, I'm still going to view them as the better team and a team that, you know, we were talking about as a potential, not just playoff team, but maybe, you know, AFC title contender. And, you know, I'm not going to let the 0-2 part of it change my mind completely. So it should be an interesting game, but potentially tough one. But run the ball, control the clock, and that's going to give Washington their best chance.
Yeah, I mean, look, they were right there with a chance to beat Kansas City last week at Arrowhead. Right. And I agree with you. I talked about it earlier in the show. I think there is a path here tonight. It's that. They can run the football against a team that hasn't stopped the run and is banged up front. And, you know, we've seen many times, you know, the underdog possess the ball, keep the keep the big play potential on the sideline for much of it, and get it done. We'll see. So with respect to tonight defensively, Cleland Farrell is out. Emmanuel Forbes, I'm assuming, is out. I guess we'll see a lot of Johnny Newton. Who else? Jamin Davis plays tonight, and how do they get to Joe Burrow with any sort of pass rush without sending eight people?
Yeah, so, you know, when we talked to Dan Quinn about this, obviously on Saturday, their last practice of the week, when we learned that Farrell was going to be out, and he was asked about Jamin Davis, but
he's got the only sack of the year, right? The only two sacks of the year?
Yes, they will have a game tonight where nobody on the field will have had a sack this year going into the game. He was asked about Jamin Davis. Now, I think Jamin Davis will be active this game, just, you know, purely from a body count standpoint. But he pivoted to Javonte Jean-Baptiste, who was active last week when Jamin Davis was down, their seventh-round pick. Clearly, he's not going to have a ton of experience, but he's got good length, good speed, athleticism. So, you know, they clearly like him. But he also cited Johnny Newton as somebody in that conversation when he was asked about Jamin Davis. And something I thought about going all the way back to the spring and summer was, if we're having questions about what's going to happen with that other defensive end spot opposite Dorrance Armstrong, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of, you got to get your best guys on the field, right? And I wondered, right, we just haven't seen Johnny Newton play, obviously, but is there a world where they play Johnny Newton with Daron Payne and John Allen? And if you're not getting
sure,
a pass
why
rush
not?
Anyway,
right.
Yeah, so I kind of think that's something I'm going to look for tonight. I talked about this on my podcast. I think I was saying more maybe Newton on the end, but it'd probably be more Daron Payne moving outside if they do that. But whatever it is, to me, that, you know, if Johnny Newton's ready to go, and they seem to, Quinn said he'll be playing more snaps this week. I don't know if that means, you know, full complement or just more than 12 that he had last week, but I think it makes a lot of sense, right? Because, I mean, what else are we talking about here? The other options are, other than playing Frankie Louvu there sometimes, which I think will happen as well, you know, we're talking about a seventh-round pick, a guy who's just transitioning to defensive end, and sort of Dante Fowler, who they've been using a little bit more at linebacker. So it's not like they have, like, a ton of options. So I'm really intrigued to see if they really do go with that three defensive tackle look with one of those guys kicking outside.
So what happens behind those guys tonight?
Well, I mean, you know, the secondary situation. I mean, look, Bobby Wagner coming off a very good performance. And Luke,
I'm talking about the secondary.
Yeah, for sure. I'm saying both he and Luvu had the type of aggressive games that they're looking for, Joe Witt's looking for. But the problem then is what goes behind there. And, you know, look, I mean, Benjamin St. Juice was another guy that Joe Witt cited this week as giving them the aggressive level of play that they're looking for. And, you know, no Igbinoghi. He's been okay, but, you know, they brought him in. It looked like he'd be more of a slot guy. Now they're going to have to use him. They've been having to use him more on the outside. I thought, you know, Michael Davis last week looked pretty rough against Malik Nabers, which isn't really a criticism of him. Everybody is. But, you know, nonetheless, he looked in tough shape there. I don't know. I mean, if they don't get a pass rush, I don't know how the secondary is going to stop Chase and Higgins. And not to mention, you know, the Cincinnati really used their tight ends effectively last week in the passing game. I would like Mike Gesicki, who's with them now. So I think again, if they don't get a pass rush and they can't put Cincinnati in some long down situations, you know, second and 10, things like that, it just looks to me like it's going to be a very difficult time to stop them. You know, maybe because of the tight end situation with the Bengals using a lot of 12 and 13 personnel, maybe this is a game where you lean into more three safety looks, right? With Jeremy Chinn, Quan Martin, Percy Butler, something to that effect. Maybe that's how you attack.
Yeah, Chinn, Martin, and Butler were on the field a bunch. I mean, that three safeties is a possibility. I also just was wondering if we're going to see Igben Ogeni more than we saw Davis last week.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like my sense is they've got to have a little more trust in him just based on what we've seen. And, you know, I mean, again, he was a guy that they used, that Joe Witt and Dan Quinn had in Dallas a little bit. They brought him over here. But again, we're talking about a guy who, you know, he's just been a kind of guy the last few years, and to have him be a prominent starter right now, or a prominent high rotation player, it kind of says where they're at here. So, yeah, they're going to have to find ways, you know, whether it's, it's not like you're going to fool Joe Burrow with design or anything like that, or scheme or coverage. So it's going to have to be flat out play better. And that's not going to happen if you don't get that push up front. And again, stop their run. You know, they've got Zach Moss in the backfield. We know Washington has not been able to, slow the run down too much. And also, lastly, you know, Washington is dead last in the league going into week two in terms of opponents' third down conversion percentage. So they've got to get significantly better there. And again, not to be the broken record, but if the pass rush isn't there, I just don't know how they're going to be able to improve on all these things.
Yeah, the one thing I am interested in, and I don't have the numbers, but you might. I think they've played a lot more man coverage than zone coverage this year. And they didn't necessarily do that all the time in Dallas. It seems to me like it's at least 70-30 man to zone, if not higher. Do you know what those numbers are?
I don't off the top of my head. I will look it up as soon as we're off, and I'll text it to you so you can share. Yeah, I mean, there could be that. I think that part, like, I know, look, if they have another tough game defensively, people will, you know, instinctively, you know, get mad at the coaches and you know, sure, go for it. But I think part of the issue here has been they can't do – Quinn and Joe Witt can't really kind of do what they want, which is blitz guys from here, there, and everywhere, because they don't have the cornerbacks to hold up, right, in those situations. So, I think, you know, maybe they are doing – a little bit more man, but, you know, right now I just think it's a matter of figuring out what you can do that's going to slow anybody down. They haven't had a ton of success right now.
Look, their only chance, it would seem, tonight is they're going to have to put themselves at risk on the back end by sending extra man pressure, which they've done a lot of here in the first two games. And they're going to have to do it more tonight because Burrow will wait a little bit on occasion. I'm not saying he's a holder of the football, but he doesn't mind, you know, waiting that extra hair to get the bigger play. You can't let him do that. I mean, I would imagine they're going to generate some exotics tonight. I think they played too much man coverage with the amount that I think they've blitzed, which seems pretty high, but I don't even know what those numbers are through 2 weeks. I think it's always so ridiculous to take two-game sample sizes and think that that is going to hold up for sure. But we'll see. So, Jaden Daniels tonight. What do you think the biggest takeaway teaching points have been for Cliff Kingsbury and Tavita Pritchard and David Blau and the whole group with Daniels through two games?
Well, I you know, they've talked a lot about how, you know, you he makes a mistake, you discuss it, and then he doesn't kind of make it again. And, you know, sometimes that can sound fairly, you know, coach speaky, right? What I'm intrigued to see is, you know, we saw in the first game, there was a lot of that fight or flight instinct going on whenever he was getting a pass rush. That's why he took off a bunch and had those, you know, 16 official carries. And then in the first half against the Giants, it was somewhat similar. He was sacked four times in the first half, I think in part because he was, you know, bouncing out of the pocket. But in the second half, I thought he got a lot better of staying in the pocket. That throw to Noah Brown down the middle late, I think, was a really good example of that because he was getting pressure from all sides. Is this an example of how he is recognizing the mistakes and fixing them? Because I think if that's the case, then I think for Cliff Kingsbury, this goes a long way towards what you can look to do, especially getting the ball down the field. I think, you know, if he's able to, you know, look, and Cincinnati's got some pass rushers. Trey Hendrickson, one of their defensive ends, he's been absolutely crushing people this year. They've got Sam Hubbard. He's really good as well. So they'll get a pass rush on Washington from the edge. And if Jaden's able to stay in the pocket and, you know, keep looking down the field, I think that's just going to open up so much more for what Kingsbury wants to do. But simultaneously, I think it will be a really good example of the fact that he is, in fact, learning quickly and not making a lot of the mistakes over and over again. So I think if that happens, that goes a long way. If not, if it's a little, you know, again, we all understand Washington, there's still some concerns about their offensive tackles. But if Jaden's able to do that, again, I think it shows a lot about his progress, his development, but also what Kingsbury can think he can do if he doesn't think his quarterback is going to keep bouncing outside. He's got to get rid of the ball quick, right? We had that comment from with a Cameron Taylor Britt, the Bengals defensive back, saying he looked at what he's seen of Washington's offense looks like a college offense. Obviously that's probably a bit much, but the point would be they are looking to get rid of the ball fairly quickly. And that's not a crazy idea, of course. You want the ball in your playmaker's hands, but I do think part of it also is because Jaden Daniels was certainly early struggling with, you know, recognizing maybe where the pass rush is coming from, but also what to do when it came. So I think that's a huge deal both for him tonight, but also for the coaching staff to understand what they can get away with in terms of play calling.
Talking to Ben Standing, of course, at Ben Standing on X on Twitter. Give me a player who we have not seen produce, not that we haven't seen him on the field, or maybe your answer will be somebody we haven't seen on the field a lot, that is on the verge of stepping up, whether it's tonight or in the next few weeks, but that we'll be talking about a lot more. Because I have one in mind. I'm wondering if you have one.
Well, okay, so Terry McLaurin wouldn't count, but I would imagine there's got to be some more emphasis about getting him the ball. We certainly asked about it a lot, and they talked about it, and Cliff Kingsbury, you know, fell on the sword, saying they got to do a better job of doing that. But, you know, again, I think this is not a – this guy played last week and had a prominent role, but I think this may be the game where Noah Brown is officially the second receiver. I mean, what we saw last week was pretty impressive from him for his first game, but the fact that he's got – that size, he's a really good blocker. I just think that's going to be so key for this team, especially with where they're at. And I know that we're all sort of like, hey, you know, Noah Brown, this is a good addition. But, you know, there's still Zacchaeus, there's still De'Ami Brown and Luke McCaffrey and all that. But I think, you know, sooner than later here, I think Noah Brown's going to establish himself as the number two. Again, I don't mean number two like Gary Clark to Art Monk, but a guy that can be more effective in these ways. And I also think if they end up doing more 12 personnel, which I think is potential for, you know, for both blocking purposes, but also, you know, if they don't feel they have three receivers that can churn out there all the time, you know, I think sooner than later we're going to see more Ben Sinnott. I don't think it's necessarily this game, but I do think, you know, he's an effective pass catcher, and you got to find weapons wherever you can. The receivers have been fairly inconsistent in getting, you know, getting the balls underneath a bit more, I think, is where Jaden Daniels has had some of his more success. So again, I don't know if it's this game, but I think sooner than later we're going to see more Ben Sinnott.
Yeah, I like your Noah Brown, obviously, and I think that that's, you know, based on just listening to Kingsbury talk about him, listening to Quinn talk about him, listening to Jaden talk about him. I thought it was notable that when Jaden was talking about him, he emphasized the route running and the separation that Noah Brown got and has gotten since joining the team. But I thought of Sinnott and McCaffrey both. McCaffrey was open last week for some big plays and got some separation. And they ran a play for Sinnott. I don't know why Jaden didn't throw it to him. But that usually is a sign that they'd like to get the ball into his hands to see what he can do because they think he can do something with it. I still think Ertz is a big part of what they're going to be trying to do. All right. Prediction time. Go ahead and tell everybody who you predicted and why.
Yeah, well, you know, look, like I said, the records are if we had said before the season started one of these teams would be 0-2 going into this game, nobody would have picked the Bengals. But here they are. You know, this week, I believe, Kevin, tell me if I'm wrong, of the seven teams that played before, you know, Thursday or today that were 0-2, they went, the 0-2 teams went 6-1. I don't put too much stock into results, especially 2 weeks into the season. I can't eliminate the data that we had. What we thought, like you said, 2 weeks is not enough information. The fact that the Bengals almost beat the Chiefs last week, you know, except for a late pass interference that cost them, I still view them as one of the better teams in the league, and I just don't see Joe Burrow going down 0-3. So, you know, I think the Bengals win this. I think for Washington to keep it close, you know, beat the spread, essentially, they're going to have to be able to run the ball and not turn it over. But at the same time, I just think the Bengals feel poised to have a big game on national TV. So regardless of how the, you know, sure, I don't see Washington getting, you know, blown out from the jump, but to me, I've got it like Bengals 27-17. Again, if Washington wins the turnover battle, we'll have another story, but you know, until proven, like even like last week, like I know the Giants just won yesterday against the Browns. Good for them. But it's not like I saw some Washington team just completely crushed. Yeah, they scored on every offensive possession, all field goals. The defense was giving up a lot of yards, and if the Giants don't have their kicker get hurt, Washington may easily have lost that game. So I got Bengals 27-17 on the national stage. But, you know, as I'll repeat over and over again, as long as Jaden Daniels looks the part, I'm not too worried about the record, and I think he will. So I think that, to me, is going to be the positive. But, yeah, I got the Bengals getting the W and covering.
All right, 27-17 Cincinnati, Ben has. All right,
I understand that's smelly. That doesn't smell good. I get that, but
yeah, I've got Washington plus the number. I mean, they're the sharp side, gambling side. Doesn't mean they're going to win outright. We'll see what happens. I mean, Atlanta was the sharp side last night. They didn't cover. Had a chance to cover. Probably should have covered if the Chiefs refs weren't out there, but. That happens sometimes with the defending two-time champs. I'll talk to you later. Enjoy it. Are you in Kentucky right now?
I am in Kentucky. I'm looking out my window of my hotel. I haven't seen too much of it. I was debating going to Lexington, but it's a little too far away. But I'll go into the city in a bit. I got to get Skyline Chili, right? That's the move when you're here?
I guess. I think it's kind of overrated. I'll tell you what's great in Cincinnati is Grater's Ice Cream. They actually now sell it. You get it in a lot of places, but that's where Grater's Ice Cream was born, in Cincinnati. All right, brother. I'll talk to you later. Enjoy it.
See you, man. Bye.
Ben Standig, everybody. When we come back, we'll finish up the NFL games we didn't talk about. Denton will get to a quick college football weekend recap as well. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
Leggett motions. Panthers work right to left. Dalton out of the shotgun. Knee-high snap. Checks down. Hubbard right flat. 30. He's got the 35. Tiptoes the sideline and makes it out close to midfield.
What was that highlight you just came in with? Sorry.
That was an Andy Dalton pass to Chuba Hubbard. It was supposed to be a touchdown. Oh. I pulled the wrong one.
It wasn't the one that you said you were coming back with. That's fine. How about the Carolina Panthers yesterday? They benched Bryce Young. They put Andy Dalton in there. They put the red rifle in there. He throws for 319, three touchdowns. The team generates 430 yards offense, and they beat the Raiders 36-22. They had scored a combined 13 points in their first two games. Dalton's always been able to come in this situation and be, you know, a starter. I mean, he's at his best, Andy Dalton was a mid-tier starter and a guy that if you had everything good around him, you could win with. I thought it was really interesting to listen to some of the pregame stuff about the Bryce Young stuff. Almost everybody crushed David Tepper and the Carolina organization. But a few players in particular said, look, Dave Canales has a locker room to handle. And if it's obvious to everybody in week three that the other guy gives you a much better chance to win, you have to play that guy or you lose the locker room. And so for a first-time head coach in the third week of the season to bench the number one overall pick from a year ago took big you-know-whats. And I'm not sure David Tepper approved of it or not, but he did it anyway, and they won a game 36-22. You know, before the season started, you and I talked about Carolina and said they actually have some talent on that team, and it comes down to whether or not they can get any quarterback play. I think yesterday didn't prove that Bryce Young will never be able to do it. That's stupid to say when we've seen some of the performances that we've seen just this year in the last couple of weeks. But certainly he isn't ready to do it, and Andy Dalton is. And Carolina annihilated the Raiders 36-22. By the way, the Panthers are the Bengals' next opponent. Let's go to L.A. for what turned out to be a road game for the Rams against the 49ers.
37-yard field goal. And the Niners lose in L.A. Still 2 seconds to go. How did this happen?
Yeah, San Francisco radio. They had a 24-14 fourth quarter lead in the game and blew it. Brock Purdy outstanding in the game. Jordan Mason, again, pretty good running the football. Juwan Jennings with no Debo, no McCaffrey, no Kittle, had three touchdown catches, had 11 catches for 175 yards. But the Rams just kept hanging in there. And Matt Stafford made a couple of big throws to Tutu Atwell in particular. And they got it done on a Joshua Cardi walk-off field goal or with 2 seconds to go. I thought a key play in this game, considering that the Rams were having a difficult time, you know, really moving the football in the first half. They had a few three and outs. They had one to start the second half. Was a 55-yard field goal attempt with 2:47 left at 24-17. It just gave the Rams too good a field position. I know 55-yard field goals, like the Eagles tried a 60-yarder, the Cowboys kicked a 65-yarder, but I think with what San Francisco had defensively, I think they should have punted there, and I thought that before the fact. The 49ers fall to 1-2 in a battle of two very banged-up football teams. Let's go to Tampa for the Broncos and the undefeated Bucks.
Play fake. Knicks rolls to his right. Run it, Bo, to the five. to the goal line. Touchdown, Denver.
Go figure the NFL. The Broncos went in there as a big underdog. They had lost their first two in ugly fashion. The Bucs looked great, including last week's win in Detroit. Bo Nix looked like he couldn't play. 25 of 36, 216, no touchdowns, no picks, an 80.6 QBR, which included another 47 yards on the ground and a touchdown. And by the way, Jaleel McLaughlin has a touchdown run on a fourth and goal at the one. You got to watch it if you haven't seen it. I mean, the way he dekes out the chasing defenders. But the Broncos go in and they beat down the Buccaneers in South Florida 26-7 for their first win of the year. Let's go to Indy for the Colts and the Bears.
They're back to work the line of scrimmage. Right side give to Jonathan Taylor. Breaks it out. He's at the 20, 25, the 10. He's at the 5. Touchdown, Jonathan Taylor. Scoots in from 29 yards out. Taylor started up the middle, then broke it out right.
All right, so Denton, a couple things real quickly. I'm a fan of Anthony Richardson's talent and physical ability. I'm not a fan of playing him right now. He is not ready to play quarterback the way you need to play quarterback in the NFL. Two picks yesterday, another wretched sort of QBR game. Look, he's going to make the highlight play. I mean, the touchdown that he had in week one against Houston was ridiculous. He now has six interceptions in two games. I think he's got a fumble to go with that. They beat the Bears 21-16. Caleb Williams, by the way, threw for 363, but two touchdowns, two picks in the game. Sacked another four times after getting sacked seven times on Monday Night Football. Indianapolis is too good roster-wise to waste this year developing Anthony Richardson. They should play Joe Flacco.
Did you see that that speed option that Chicago tried to run?
I didn't.
You have to find it on Twitter. Literally four of their five offensive linemen, as soon as the ball was snapped, were on all fours. It was a fourth down. It was stopped for a massive loss, like a fourth and goal. They run a speed option.
What do you mean they were on fours? They just got decimated?
They just got destroyed. Like I saw a still frame from the actual play, and I thought somebody had edited all offensive linemen laying on their face. But it's right. Actually what happened. It's an insane play to watch.
Let me mention one other thing, because I think Shane Steichen's going to be, I think he's a good coach. And I think they're going to get a little bit frustrated with Anthony Richardson. He gives you three or four ridiculous highlight plays a game. But he throws some of the dumbest, he just doesn't see the field. You can see it. But with 2:01 to go, the Bears scored to make it 21-16. They actually missed the two-point conversion. And the Bears only had one timeout left, and they kicked the ball towards the end zone. It was fielded in the end zone and downed in the end zone. That's just a massive clock management error. Colts, you got to return that kick, get the clock below the two-minute warning. It forced them to run to give the Bears another timeout defensively on the first two plays instead of having just one timeout. It doesn't even matter where you return it to. Honestly, at that point, you just want 40 seconds, another 40 seconds off the clock, which they couldn't take off the clock. But it didn't matter because Jonathan Taylor ran for a first down on second down and like seven. He ended up with 110 yards. But the Colts have a good roster. They're good defensively. They're good in the backfield with Taylor. They're good at receiver with Pierce and Pittman and Downs. They're good at tight end with Mo Alie-Cox. The kid Doolin can play. The kid from the bigger kid, the 6'3" kid, who caught that touchdown pass from Richardson in week one. It's going to be a Bryce Young situation, I'm predicting, in Indianapolis. They're going to turn to Joe Flacco at some point in Indianapolis. Let's finish up our Around the NFL with what Malik Willis did against his former team in Nashville.
The second down, they fake the handoff to Melton, dumps it off to Wilson, left side. He's barreling his way to the 15, to the 10, to the 5, to the end zone. Touchdown! And the Packers cash it in.
30-14, Packers get to 2-1, two straight wins with no Jordan Love. It looked like he might go yesterday. They didn't need him. Will Levis shows that he's not up to speed and ready to go in the NFL yet. But how about Malik Willis? I mean, this guy looked about as bad and unprepared to play NFL quarterback the last time we saw him in Tennessee. He gets with Matt LaFleur, some playmakers, an offensive line, some scheme, and in back-to-back games, he's completed 25 of 36 passes, 73.5% of his passes so far, 2 touchdowns, no picks, and yesterday another 73 yards on the ground in a 30-14 win against his former team. By the way, real quickly, the Packers have rushed the football with the quarterback too. 612 yards rushing in their first 3 games of the season. And their DB, Xavier McKinney, 3rd consecutive game with an interception to start the year. All right. I wanted to just read something real quickly, Denton, before you get to your college football recap. I got this. You know what? He didn't put his name on here. He just wrote, "You read an email I wrote to you a few weeks ago complaining about Daniels and the comparison to Lamar Jackson. I was wrong. I am fine if Jaden Daniels ends up having the career Lamar Jackson has." Yeah, I do remember that email. I remember somebody, a couple of people saying, "Stop comparing him to Lamar Jackson. We want much better than that." What do you mean you want much better than Lamar Jackson, a 2-time MVP in a budding Hall of Fame career? You got to be kidding me. Lamar Jackson's awesome. Yeah, if they get behind, he doesn't throw the ball well from the pocket. Not yet. Lamar Jackson, in his first 3 games of the season, is completing 65.6% of his passes, and he's rushed for 254 yards. His QBR yesterday was the best except for Malik Willis's. All right, Denton, tell us about the college football weekend quickly.
All right, we'll do this quick. God, we're having a day in the studio, by the way, Kevin. This computer's crashed multiple times. The fire alarm is currently going off in our studio. We might be under, we are thriving today. I'll make this quick, though. I thought this weekend in college football was awesome. There was a couple of really good matchups. You were 100% right, and I'm eating crow. Michigan can win. They can win without throwing the ball. They suck at quarterback. They're not good.
They can't throw a forward pass.
It is atrocious, but their defense and running game is so good that they beat a very talented USC team. Although I am starting to think about USC, and I had their under 7.5 this year. I think people might have overestimated them, myself included, after the LSU game. Because LSU's defense is not very good either. But I saw USC beat LSU, and I thought, well, maybe they could be physical in the Big Ten. Saturday told a different story there.
LSU's defense, just as a side note, might be worse than it was last year. But that besides that, so I bet Michigan. I didn't feel good about it because whether it was Warren or Orgy, I thought they were doomed at quarterback. But, you know, the world was on USC in this game. It was an intense football game. I'm impressed with Miller Moss. I think Miller Moss, I don't care what the numbers say, he threw a pick six in this game that was devastating. But after he came back through 2 touchdowns, I think he's a pro quarterback, and I don't know where he is projected. He's only a junior, I think. I think he's got another year. But I really like Miller Moss. I'm a fan of Miller Moss. I was rooting for Michigan, and this game was really incredible. They got that kid Mullings to break off a 63-yard run against basically 10 people in the box because they can't throw the football. Like, this guy Alex Orgy for Michigan literally threw for 32 yards, and those completions were all bubble screens. He can't throw the football. He plays quarterback at Michigan, and he can't throw the football, but they rush for 300 yards, and they won the game. That was a really interesting game. Michigan-Tennessee, Tennessee-Oklahoma, I was not right about.
Yeah, that was a... God, I wanted that game to be so good. By the way, what a snooze fest between Oklahoma State and Utah this week. I was so bummed at that. I actually
I turned away from it when Oklahoma State made a late run to get it to three.
Yeah, I could. Tennessee, Oklahoma. I thought that the win for Tennessee is the second best win of the year in college football behind Texas's win over Michigan. The environment at Norman was awesome. They're not known for being like a crazy crowd, but at one point the broadcast said the decibel level was like 117,
yeah,
which is insane. So the crowd at Norman was awesome. Tennessee is really impressive. Like this guy Nico didn't necessarily ball out, so to speak, but he played really, really well. This was a great performance from the Vols.
So, first time really watching him, Nico I. We'll eventually get around to pronouncing his name. He's 6'6". He is Polynesian descent, kind of a, you know, Marcus Mariota, biggest fan of Marcus Mariota. He is a redshirt freshman. Tennessee is ranked 6th in the country. They're in Norman. This is a big spot. I thought he looked okay. I think he holds it too long on a lot of occasions. But the biggest story in this game was Oklahoma, like Michigan, doesn't have a quarterback that can throw a forward pass. And in their case, they just don't have the running game or the physicality that Michigan has up front to be able to run the football. Tennessee was most impressive to me on defense. I think Oklahoma's really good defensively, but Tennessee gets the win. But, man, I mean, that SEC, I mean, they still have Bama and Georgia on the schedule. Could they lose to both of those teams and still make the playoff? The answer is probably yes.
I would say, I guess it depends on everybody else, but I'll say probably yes, yeah.
All right, what else?
All right, final thing here that I want to touch on. How about Vanderbilt? You know, they lost to Missouri, but this quarterback, Diego Pavia,
love him.
He is an agent of chaos.
He come from? UCF?
No, he came from one of the schools in New Mexico. And before that, he was at a JUCO, I believe, in New Mexico. So a great story. And now he puts Vanderbilt in games where, at least on paper, they have no business. Like, that game should not have been close against Missouri, and it was. Oh, it was awesome.
They beat Virginia Tech to start the season off, and he played great. Now they lost because I was looking this up when they were winning the game Saturday against Missouri, and at one point they were up, I think, 13-10 or 20-13 or something like that. They lost to Georgia State last week, which hurts. But Diego Pavia is an excellent quarterback. A college quarterback, anyway. Missouri did win the game. The Vanderbilt kicker shanked that kick in the second overtime. We were about headed towards the two-point conversion things, which would have been the worst. Maryland got a win over Villanova. I think that's fine. They got a big one this week. They get Indiana on the road. And Indiana's one of the surprise teams in the country right now, undefeated, and they have been lights out offensively. The Hoosiers are 6.5-point favorites over the Terps. Should be a good one. Ty Felton, I've been talking about him since week one. One of the best receivers in the country. Moving up Denton draft boards. I now see him in a couple of them as a projected late first. No worse than a night two pick. He's got over 600 yards receiving in the first four games of the year. All right, predictions for tonight next. Before we get to our predictions for tonight, I did want to just briefly weigh in on this C.J. Abrams being sent down to the minor leagues after apparently he stayed out all night at a Chicago area casino when they were in Chicago playing the Cubs. He left only a few hours before the day game they had with the Cubs on Friday, a game in which he led off, went 0-for-3 with a walk and a strikeout. So, I don't know, maybe it's me here, but you're telling me that one of your star players, one of your supposed players that are going to be around when you start to compete, that you publicly crush him by sending him down to the minors because he broke curfew, in essence? It can't just be that. Am I right? I mean, I've not followed this story other than reading it over the weekend. Lots of football going on. And tomorrow we'll talk more about it. We'll try to get somebody on with us. But seriously, you send C.J. Abrams down to the minors because he broke curfew and stayed out all night before a meaningless game against the Cubs? Nah, it's got to be more than that. Right, Denton, or am I missing something?
This had to have been maybe not the first offense.
Has to be something
else. Like, there has to be something else going on that was not made public, and then this was made public, and that's when Rizzo or whoever's in charge of discipline said, something needs to be done.
I'm not criticizing the Nats for doing this. I'm just saying that my gut is that there's a lot more to just this one incident. If it, you know, put them into position to kind of, you know, embarrass him publicly. All right, final score predictions tonight. I'll go first. I've got the Bengals winning the game, but this is going to be a hell of a football game. Washington's going to move the ball. They're going to score. Cincinnati wins it 30-27 on a walk-off field goal at the end of the game. But Jaden Daniels throws his first two touchdown passes of the season in a very, very encouraging competitive loss, but one that'll have me pissed off if they got a chance to win it and they don't. 30-27, Cincinnati. What do you got?
I'm going to be bold. I think the Commanders win this one, Kevin. I think they win it 28-27. I'm predicting a big night for Jaden Daniels, and I also think we get a big evening from Terry to the point where we're not questioning whether or not he's a number one receiver tomorrow, because Lord help, if he only has like 20 yards, those conversations that many people were upset at us for having this week, they're going to get louder. So I'm thinking a big game from Jaden and Terry. I think the Commanders shock the world and win 28-27.
Not going to surprise me if it happens. Also, at this point, nothing's going to surprise me on any NFL Sunday or Monday night, or Thursday night for that matter. We're done for the day. Enjoy the game. We'll be back here first thing tomorrow, 10 a.m., to recap the whole thing. Up next, Chris Russell and Denton.
It's just Russell solo.
It's just Russell solo. Even better. I don't know. Can he do 3 hours by himself? I think he can. Russell's next.